So whenever you jump into a new world-building project in science fiction, you probably have this built-in expectation that you're looking at a solvable equation.
Right, like a grand complex puzzle.
Exactly. I mean, we are so trained to expect a Dark Lord who can just be defeated, or, a super weapon that just needs to be disarmed, or maybe even a fragile peace treaty waiting to be signed in the final chapter.
Yeah, you look at the universe and you instinctively ask yourself, well, how do the heroes fix this?
Right. But then you step into the universe of Warhammer 40,000, and you very quickly realize that the tunnel doesn't actually have an end. It's just a closed loop, and the entire thing is on fire.
Utterly on fire, yeah.
So today's deep dive is pulling from a really fascinating essay titled Why the War Never Ends: The Core Conflicts of Warhammer 40,000. And our mission for this deep dive is to explore why this iconic sci-fi setting is literally designed to be an unwinnable, perpetual motion machine of conflict.
Which is such a wild concept to wrap your head around.
It really is. Like, what does it teach us about world building when war isn't a problem to be solved, but, the inescapable physics of the universe itself?
It requires a pretty profound shift in how you consume a story.
Mm.
I mean, whether you're a longtime lore fanatic listening to this, or you are coming in completely cold, you essentially have to leave your traditional story expectations right at the door.
Okay, let's unpack this, because when I first looked at the source material, I completely fell for the illusion, and we need to shatter the biggest misconception newcomers have when they look at this universe. And it starts with the poster boys of the setting, the Imperium of Man.
Yeah, the visual language of the game is intentionally very deceptive. You see human beings in a sci-fi setting fighting terrifying, grotesque aliens and literal demons, and it is almost involuntary to map the good guy archetype onto them.
I mean, you see the box art. You've got these towering, golden-armored super soldiers, the space marines, standing valiantly against hordes of monsters. You naturally think, oh, the defenders of humanity. These are the heroes I'm supposed to root for.
Right, which makes total sense from a standard trope perspective.
But the essay we are looking at makes it crystal clear. The Imperium of Man are absolutely not the good guys. They are a fascist, theocratic, genocidal dystopia. And Games Workshop, the company that created the setting, actually had to release a blunt statement in November 2021, basically shouting this from the rooftops.
Yeah, they had to be very explicit.
They did. They said, there are no goodies in the Warhammer 40,000 universe, especially not the Imperium of Man. They describe it as this monstrous, tyrannical regime turned up to 11.
And to understand why it is so monstrous, you really have to look at the cultural water the setting was born in. It was created in 1987. Largely by a designer named Rick Priestley, and he was operating in Thatcher-era Britain.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so this was a time heavily influenced by really loud anti-authoritarian comics. Like, yeah. If you think of publications like 2000 AD featuring Judge Dredd or Nemesis the Warlock, you really start to see the DNA.
Oh.
You mix that cynical British comic tone with Frank Herbert's Dune and the sort of eternal champion gloom of Michael Moorcock, and you get a very specific recipe for a universe.
So it's kind of like watching a really dark dystopian movie and ending up rooting for the evil empire just because they have cool uniforms.
Exactly.
Like, if you do that, you are entirely missing the joke. The grim darkness of this future isn't an aspiration or a role model. It is a satirical punchline.
That framing is so essential. When you look at the grotesque nature of the Imperium, I mean the sheer, unimaginable scale of its cruelty, the paranoia, the fanatical disregard for human life, and you feel physically repulsed by it, you are reading the design correctly.
Right, you're supposed to be grossed out.
Yes. The satire is potent because it takes the logical extremes of authoritarianism and just stretches them across a million worlds.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because if you want to understand how humanity got this bad, you have to look at the rotting, heavily ironic core of the whole empire. Its founder, the Emperor of Mankind.
Yes. The figure upon whom the entire tragic, hypocritical structure of the Imperium rests.
So going back 10,000 years in the lore, the Emperor was this immortal, immensely powerful human. He wanted to reconquer the galaxy and unite humanity. But he was mortally wounded during this catastrophic civil war called the Horus Heresy.
A massively destructive conflict.
Yeah, and his favorite son, the War Master Horus, was corrupted by dark forces, turned half the military against him, and killed another angelic leader named Sanguinius. The Emperor finally managed to kill Horus, but he was maimed beyond recovery. So for 10 millennia, he's been sitting on something called the Golden Throne.
Which is an incredibly deceptive name.
Yeah.
It is less a seat of royal power and, well, more of a horrific, esoteric life support machine?
A life support machine that doubles as a psychic amplifier. And this is where the sheer horror of the setting kicks in. To keep him alive, to keep this psychic lighthouse burning so human ships can actually navigate through space, the Imperium sacrifices thousands of human psychers to the throne every single day.
Just burning them as fuel.
Literally. And just for context, a psyker is basically a human mutant born with the ability to tap into this psychic dimension. They just burn these people out as biological fuel to keep this corpse god on life support. But even that horrific detail isn't the ultimate punchline here.
No, the true tragedy lies in the ideology of the Emperor himself before he fell.
Right. The source points out that when the Emperor was walking around alive, he strictly outlawed all religion. He promoted what he called the imperial truth. It was entirely secular, rationalist, and atheist.
He explicitly forbade the worship of deities. He understood the terrifying mechanics of this universe, where faith and dogma are actually dangerous because emotion can literally manifest as psychic predators.
Wow.
So he tried to starve those predators by enforcing rationality.
But then he gets wounded and stuck on this throne, and his empire immediately turns him into a literal deity. It is the ultimate betrayal of everything he stood for. It would be like a famous, staunch, vocal atheist passing away, only for his closest followers to immediately build temples to him, worship him as a god, and start ritually sacrificing thousands of people a day in his name.
It's completely backwards.
Yeah. The Imperium became the exact galaxy-spanning theocracy he explicitly tried to prevent.
It is a devastating structural irony. And what's fascinating is how that single afternoon, 10,000 years ago, locked humanity into a permanent siege mentality. When they lost their visionary leader, they also lost their secular rationale. All that remained was the inertia of a massive military machine.
Just a blind machine running on momentum.
Precisely. Dogma entirely replaced science. Ignorance was weaponized. They are trapped in the amber of their own fundamentalism.
So if the human empire is rotting from within, fueled by the daily sacrifice of its own citizens just to keep the lights on, you really have to wonder how they haven't collapsed yet. The answer is that the alternative outside their borders is somehow even worse. Which leads us to the warp, and we find out why humanity's primary enemy literally cannot be defeated.
The warp, also known as the immaterium. Mm-hmm. This is the parallel dimension of raw psychic energy that human ships use to travel faster than light. But, you know, it is not just empty dark space.
No, it is shaped by the emotions of every living thing in the galaxy. And over millions of years, those collective emotions congealed into four malign gods. The chaos gods, or the ruinous powers. You've got Horn, the blood god, fueled by rage, war, and murder.
Then there's Nurgle, the plague father, born of disease, decay, and despair. But strangely, also possessing a weird, paradoxical, grandfatherly love for the plagues he creates.
Which is so creepy. Then Cianch, the changer of ways, who thrives on ambition, scheming, and sorcery. And finally, Slaanesh, the dark prince of excess, pleasure, and pain, who is actually born from the sheer decadence of an entire alien civilization.
And these gods project their power into the physical universe through their foot soldiers, the demons. But the structural trap that the essay points out is the fundamental nature of these demons. They aren't biological creatures. They are just fragments of their god's power given temporary physical form.
So they can't permanently die.
Exactly.
If you slay a demon in the physical world, its essence just seeps back into the warp to reform later. You could win every single battle against chaos, and you will never reduce their supply by a single soldier. The source essay actually compares it to fighting a war against the weather.
A perfect analogy.
But wait, if chaos is made of immortal emotion demons, mathematically, humanity should have been wiped out millennia ago. What is the structural safety valve keeping them at bay?
This raises an important question, and it really highlights the brilliance of the universe's design. Chaos is undeniably the most powerful force in the galaxy. But they are structurally incapable of winning because of a phenomenon known as the Great Game.
So wait, is it kind of like a massive corporate monopoly where the board members absolutely despise each other too much to actually conquer the market, so they just keep sabotaging their own company from the inside?
Yes, that is such a good way to put it. I haven't heard it in corporate terms before, but that is the perfect analogy. The chaos gods inherently hate each other.
Oh.
Korn is the god of martial honor and brutal war. Utterly despises Slaanesh, the god of hedonistic excess.
Oh, that makes sense.
Right. And Dedich, the god of endless change and scheming, is the natural diametric opposite of Nurgle, the god of stagnation and decay. The Great Game is their eternal internal struggle for supremacy within the warp itself.
So the moment one of them gets too strong in the physical universe, the other three just gang up and drag them back down.
Precisely. Because chaos is made of raw, uncontrolled emotion. That is its greatest strength. It is terrifying and infinite. But that raw emotion is also the very mechanism that guarantees it will sabotage itself forever. Its own nature is division. If chaos could ever unite for more than a brief moment, the physical galaxy would fall in an instant. But it structurally cannot.
Which is such a brilliant narrative trap. Okay, so we have chaos constantly canceling itself out. If you are humanity and you see this nightmare dimension trying to eat reality, your first thought would be diplomacy, right? You'd look around at the other alien races in the galaxy and say, hey, maybe we should form a coalition so we don't all get dragged into hell.
A logical response.
Right. But in this universe, diplomacy isn't just difficult. It is a literal sin.
That brings us back to the Imperial Creed. It is enforced by the state church, the Adeptus Ministorum, and its commandments are absolute. Purge the heretic, beware the mutant and the psyker, and crucially, abhor the alien. The specific phrasing is, suffer not the alien to live.
Xenophobia isn't just a casual prejudice for the Imperium. It's codified law and divine commandment. And the source essay brings up an alien race called the Tau Empire as the perfect foil to show how sick this human mindset really is.
Oh, the Tau are fascinating.
Yeah, they are this young, idealistic civilization. They actually expand through technology and diplomacy, following a philosophy they call the greater good. Now, sure, the lore implies some dark rumors about rigid castes and forced relocations, but compared to the Imperium, they're practically a utopian society. They offer a coherent alternative to eternal slaughter.
And consider how the Imperium reacts to that alternative. They treat the Tau as an existential heresy. They attempt to exterminate them on sight. Because in Warhammer 40,000, hope itself is a threat to the established order.
So I have to ask, does the very presence of the Tau actually make the Imperium look even worse? Because if hope and diplomacy exist, if a functioning society is demonstrably possible, it proves that the Imperium's horrific cruelty is a choice. It's not just a grim necessity of a dark universe. Humanity is actively choosing to be this monstrous.
Yes, it completely exposes the lie at the heart of authoritarianism. The regime constantly claims that its brutality is the only thing keeping humanity alive in a hostile galaxy. But when confronted with a civilization that actually functions on cooperation and technological progress, the regime must destroy it.
Ugh.
Not out of genuine self-defense, but to protect its own ideological monopoly.
It is so dark.
It is. And this ideological rigidity is exactly what causes the Imperium to rot from the inside.
You see that internal rot everywhere in the lore. They spend an enormous amount of their military energy just fighting themselves. You have the Inquisition purging entire human worlds, billions of people, just on the suspicion of corruption.
Just wiping them out.
Yeah. You have the tech priests of the Adeptus Mechanicus who control all the machinery, hoarding technology for their own political agendas. You have the standard military and the space marines constantly deployed just to put down internal rebellions against the crippling taxes and slave labor.
When a civilization is scaled to a million worlds and is run entirely on a foundation of fear, enforced ignorance, and religious dogma, it inherently generates its own civil wars as a byproduct. The system isn't just failing, it is designed to fracture.
So you have this beautiful, terrible, grinding stalemate. And for decades of real-world time, Games Workshop just froze the setting there. The timeline was stuck at the year 999 of the 41st millennium, 999.M41. The clock was basically permanently set at 1 minute to midnight.
A frozen narrative.
Right. But then, a few years ago, they did something wild. They finally moved the timeline forward.
What's fascinating here is the sheer narrative audacity of how they handled that progression. When you have a setting defined by stasis, moving the plot forward is incredibly dangerous. But they didn't just advance the plot, they literally tore the fabric of the galaxy in half.
Enter Abaddon the Despoiler. He is the successor to Horus, leading the forces of chaos. For 10,000 years, he had launched these massive assaults out of a region of space called the Eye of Terror, 13 Black Crusades in total, and the 13th one finally landed the killing blow. He destroyed a planet called Cadia.
The anchor of the sector.
Yeah, Cadia was this legendary fortress world that basically functioned as the gateway blocking the Eye of Terror from the rest of the galaxy. For 10 millennia, the rallying cry of the entire human military was, Cadia stands. But finally, Cadia fell.
And the destruction of Cadia didn't just remove a military checkpoint. The planet was acting as a physical linchpin for reality in that sector. Its destruction ripped open something called the Cicatrix Maledictum, the Great Rift.
It's like a dam that's been holding back a massive flood for 10,000 years, finally shattering. This Great Rift is a galaxy-spanning chain of warp storms. It's an actual physical wound in reality, and it split the Imperium right down the middle.
Cut it clean in half.
And it triggered the Noctis Aeterna, this massive psychic blackout where the Astronomicon, that psychic lighthouse powered by the dying emperor, was just snuffed out across huge regions of space. Now, the galaxy is severed. You have the Imperium Sanctus on one side, which is still barely functioning, and the Imperium Nihilus on the other, which is cut off, isolated, and described in the lore as the literal gates of hell.
It is bleak.
But let me push back on this a bit. Doesn't moving the timeline forward and doing something this apocalyptic risk ruining the permanent stalemate that made the setting work so well in the first place?
It is a very risky maneuver from a world-building perspective, yes.
Mm-hmm.
When you disrupt a perfectly balanced stalemate, you risk resolving the tension that makes the setting compelling. But the genius of the Great Rift is that it didn't solve the war. It escalated the equilibrium. It created a higher-stakes stalemate. It proved that even a catastrophic reality-breaking shift in the balance of power doesn't lead to a victory condition. It merely changes the geography of the suffering.
And normally, when reality itself breaks like that, you expect a hero to arrive to fix it. And true to the setting's satire, a hero actually does arrive. But even the ultimate rescue mission is completely inherently compromised.
We're talking about the resurrection of Roboot Gilliman.
Yes. Gilliman is a Primarch, one of those genetically engineered demigod sons of the Emperor who fought in that civil war 10,000 years ago. He is resurrected from a 10,000-year stasis. But how he comes back is a total violation of everything the Imperium stands for.
A massive contradiction.
Absolutely. It's this unholy alliance of forbidden science by a rogue tech priest named Belisarius Kahl and literal alien magic from a newly awakening Aldari death god named Inid.
Think about the hypocrisy of that. The supreme human commander is revived by alien gods and forbidden artificial intelligence. As the essay notes, even the rescue is a frantic compromise with the very things the Imperial Creed commands its citizens to abhor.
He comes back, launches this massive new military campaign called the Indomitus Crusade, with brand new upgraded space marines, and ushers in a new era. But here is the tragic punchline of his return. Gilliman isn't a savior who is going to bring victory. Imagine you are a highly logical, rational IT administrator.
Okay, I am with you.
You go on vacation for 10,000 years, you come back, you walk into the server room and everything is on fire, half the building is a crater, and the staff are ritually sacrificing the interns to the firewall because they think it's a god.
Oh my goodness, that is painfully accurate. I mean, imagine the psychological toll. He goes to sleep in a rationalist empire built on secular truth and wakes up in a superstitious, bloody nightmare where his own father is worshipped as a corpse god.
Right. He is privately, deeply appalled by everything his empire has become. But he can't shut it down. He has to keep this rotten, horrific machine running because if he unplugs the servers, the immediate alternative is the violent extinction of the human race. He can't fix it. He can only delay the inevitable end.
Which perfectly preserves the grim, dark tone of the universe. In a traditional narrative, competence equals victory. The smart, capable leader returns, reforms the broken system, and defeats the enemy. But in Warhammer 40,000, competence is an agonizing burden. Gilliman's extreme capability only gives him a clearer, more heartbreaking view of the inescapable trap humanity is in.
So we tie all these threads back together into the central thesis of the essay, the closed loop of eternal war. Let's walk the math of these factions and look at why the aliens guarantee the stalemate. We know the Imperium is rotting from the inside and chaos constantly divides itself. But what about the alien factions?
Their goals are mutually annihilating. There is no middle ground or compromise possible with their biology or their objectives. Take the Tyranids, for example.
Right. If you try to negotiate with them, there's nobody to talk to. The Tyranids are an extragalactic hive mind swarm. They don't want your territory to build cities. They don't care about your political ideology. They view the entire Milky Way galaxy as a biological buffet.
Exactly. Just lunch.
Yeah. To them, a human, an alien, or a blade of grass is just raw biomass to be dissolved into acid pools and consumed. You cannot out-diplomat a swarm of cosmic locusts.
Then you have the Necrons. These are soulless, immortal androids who slept in stasis for 60 million years and are now waking up. They don't want to conquer and rule the current inhabitants. They want to reclaim a dead empire and mathematically eradicate everyone else to restore their ancient order.
And the orcs. Think about the biological trap of the orcs. If you're trying to cleanse a sector of orcs, your only tool is military force. But orcs are a genetically engineered fungal species designed purely for combat.
A literal weaponized ecosystem.
Yes. The act of fighting them releases spores, and the survivors literally grow physically larger and more durable the more conflict they experience. So your only method of defeating them, violence, is the exact biological fertilizer they need to reproduce and get stronger. You are biologically incapable of winning a war of attrition against them.
And finally, the Eldari, the ancient elf-like race whose own ancestors birthed the chaos god Slaanesh through their sheer decadence. They are a fractured, dying species, fighting desperately just to survive the horrific consequences of their own history.
There's literally no configuration where more than one of these factions wins. The Tyranids want to eat the orcs. The Necrons want to eradicate all life. Chaos wants to corrupt it all. The Imperium wants to purge everything non-human. The famous sentence stamped on every rule book of this game, in the grim darkness of the far future, there is only war. It isn't a dramatic warning. It is a factual mathematical description of a permanent, grinding stalemate.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this is exactly why you should care. Even if you never intend to play the tabletop game or read a single novel. This universe isn't just nerdy lore. It is a profound, sprawling exploration of flawed systems and biting satire. It asks you to look at what happens when a society responds to crisis by sacrificing its core principles, when it chooses dogma over reason, and when it ultimately ends up worshiping the very conflict that is actively killing it. It's a mirror reflecting the absolute worst outcomes of institutional survival and ideological extremism.
Which brings me to a final thought for you to take with you, something to mull over that builds on everything we've talked about today. We established early on that the warp, that alternate dimension, is entirely shaped by the emotions of living things in the real world. And this entire physical galaxy is locked in a state of eternal terror, hatred, and war. So aren't all these physical factions actually generating their own spiritual hell? Think about it. If they could all just stop fighting for 1 second, the warp might actually calm down. It might stop producing chaos gods. But they can't stop fighting because of the chaos gods and because of their own fanatical dogmas. It is an inescapable self-fulfilling prophecy, a permanent closed loop powered by collective galaxy-wide trauma.